Welcome to episode 17 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
On this episode of the podcast, we're going to be reviewing the 7th installment of the Fast and Furious franchise, Fast and Furious 7. We're also going to be talking about our top 3 films that were based on books. We've got a couple of extra special things this week as well. We've got a brand new feature that we're going to talk to you about a little later on. And we've also got an exclusive interview with Matt Davis, who is the lead singer of rock band Funeral for a Friend. And he's going to be telling us about his favourite movies. So, let's get started.
So, topic for this week then, set it last week. Your favourite films to come from books. Now, did any of you guys set some like special precedent for this? Did you rule anything out?
Yeah, I kind of put a self-imposed rule on this. I didn't want to just pick films that I loved that I knew were from books. I specifically wanted instances where I'd seen the film and loved it and also read the book and loved it. So, for example, I could have just had Blade Runner, my favourite film, but I've never actually read the original Philip K. Dick book.
Cool.
So I've gone specifically for ones where I've seen and loved both.
Okay.
Yeah, the same. It had to be a book that I read and the film that I loved, and not one of those ones where the book's better than the film. Just I had to see and do both and have enjoyed both.
Okay, it seems like we've all decided to do this the same way then, because I also made sure that I liked both the book and the film before putting it forward.
So I've gone for a film that was written, or rather the book was written by one of my all-time favourite authors. It's a Bret Easton Ellis book, and it's a great film, American Psycho.
Amazing film.
It was one of the first breakout performances of Christian Bale's career, and he's unreal in that. He's
absolutely.
I think the word that comes to mind is unhinged. You know, just the lunacy that's palpable in his eyes, and it comes from a great book. And it's one of those instances where what you see on page is translated beautifully to the film. I love Bret Easton Ellis. This was the first book of his that I read. I've read everything he's ever done since, and will continue to do so. I love his work, but this for me is his masterpiece. And the film captures the character of Patrick Bateman brilliantly.
Yeah, in a weird way, I kind of find it funny the way he is in that film. Mm. Even when he's committing these real bad, you know, horrible kind of murders, I'm laughing, you know, is how arrogant he is, and kind of, it's a massive, massive performance from him.
I mean, it is somewhat a satirical piece. There are elements of satire in it that are funny. I mean, I always think to the scene where they're comparing their business cards.
I love that. And it's about he's gotten better, hasn't he? Yeah. Because of the feel of it.
And to the naked eye, they all look exactly the same. But they're like, oh, this is an eggshell off-white with, you know, embossing. And it's like, they look exactly the same. But you can see Bateman getting gradually more and more furious and just the muscles in his face tensing up because someone has a better business card than him. And it is very funny at parts.
Yeah, I mean, I love Christian Bale, a lot of his performances in The Dark Knight, Batman trilogy, everything, Equilibrium, but
Terminator.
American Psycho is the best performance he's put in.
That scene where he's chasing after the woman, he's in the nip and he's got his chainsaw and he's covered in blood, and you know, she runs down the staircase and he sort of waves the chainsaw, watching her go, you know, descend the case, and then drops it down on her, and then he just screams out of this primal scream afterwards. He's a lunatic in that film. Brilliant.
Awesome. Weirdly, I've gone for the same author, but Rules of Attraction.
Great book, great film.
So basically, I had no intention of going to see this film. I got stuck and missed the last train home when I went to London. Annoyingly, I had to be trapped there till 5 in the morning. So I went to the cinema. It was that and something completely random. Oh, it was Up. Up had come out at the same time. So I was sitting there going, do I want to go and see Up? And do I want to go and see this film I've never heard of? So
yeah, they're two films you have on at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's for all the druggies that, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, just go and get stoned and watch loads of coloured balloons and stuff. But I went with this Rules of Attraction. And what's the guy who plays Dawson?
James Van Der Beek.
Fair play. He's an arsehole all of his life. Until that
based
film.
On what?
Until that film. For Dawson's Creek.
Okay.
I hate him.
He's an arsehole.
Blonde curtain haired prick. But in this film, he was outstanding and he proved me wrong.
He is.
And he's not
he
a prick at all. Brilliant. See, I took it back. I'm taking it back.
Good. He is great in this film though, isn't he? And it does make you forget how atrocious and soppy he was in Dawson's Creek.
Yeah. There's a scene in there as well when they go travelling and it's his housemate or his mate who goes around the world and he goes around Europe and stuff.
Kip.
That's the one. And he does like a 6-month complete travel trip in about 3 minutes. And the way it's filmed, it's all that speedy sort of like they do in space.
Yeah.
And it's perfect. And if you haven't seen this film, watch it, because the editing is outstanding.
If memory serves, it was directed by Roger Avery, who co-wrote Pulp Fiction.
Wow.
I don't think he's necessarily directed anything since. I'm not sure, but he's certainly not directed anything famous, I don't think.
Fair play.
But he did brilliantly on that one. And there are other good performances in it as well. Ian Somerhalder, who you might remember as Boone from Lost, is really good in that film as well.
Who's the girl in it as well?
I think her name's Shannon Sossaman, but I can never pronounce it properly.
She's great. Adam, cool. Topic, what did you have?
Number three, I had a film that I've spoken about before. It's in my top five of all time. I equally love the book, The Graduate.
Cool.
Never read that.
No, me neither.
Yeah, it's by Charles Webb, and it's actually based on kind of some of his, I guess, life stories as well. After he finished university, a very similar thing happened to him. So he really took inspiration from that and wrote the book. And then the film, we all know I love the film. I love the soundtrack. I love the pacing, the tempo, the direction. Everything about it is great. Mm-hmm. Dustin Hoffman's unbelievable. But the book stands up to it as well. The interesting thing is Charles Webb, the author, never actually criticised the film they made from the book. He was actually quite happy with it, but he didn't like the attention he then got from the film being made.
So that just increased his level of fame and he didn't like it.
Exactly.
Shame.
I mean, that's crazy to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I love The Graduate. I mean, you guys haven't read the book, but I actually picked it up from a charity shop a few years back when I saw it in there. So I've lent it out to a friend now, but if I can get it back off him, I'll lend it to you guys. You can read it.
I'd love to, actually, because it was a film that I just realised that Mark went, I'm all right. Brilliant.
I don't want to read it.
Don't even bother offering next time, Adam. Forget him. I'll borrow it, please.
It's Clerks 2, the novel.
Oh, I'd bloody love that.
The screenplay, I've got that if you want.
More on that later.
So, Ben, second choice for you.
Yeah, my second choice. I'd be surprised if one of you doesn't have this, actually. It's a film that I know we all love, and it comes from a really good book as well. It's Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great film, and it was the first book by Chuck Palahniuk that I ever read, and it's a phenomenal book, and the book's even sort of crazier and more out there than the film. I think the ending differs quite a bit. Now, I'm not going to go into specifics about how they differ, because I don't want to spoil the book for anyone, because I would urge anyone to read it. But it was a great book, and I've then gone on to read other Chuck Palahniuks like Choke, and he's a really good author. But the film's great, and it's one of those that just has wall-to-wall magnificent acting performances. Brad Pitt, Ed Norton, Helena Bonham Carter, even Meatloaf is great in that film.
Yeah. Good tits.
He has got a cracking set on him.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's a film that would have been in mine, but I haven't read the book.
Right.
I've always heard how great the book is, so it's on a list of things to read.
Well, do you know what? As you were kind enough to offer to lend me the book for The Graduate, you can borrow my copy of Fight Club. Oh. I would offer to lend it to Mark, but fuck him.
I don't want it. Don't want it.
In all fairness, come on, Mark can't read.
Yeah, it's true.
This should have been best films made from audiobooks.
Picture books. My second choice is Stephen King.
Yeah.
Just him in general.
Yeah. Just any of the 30 films that have been made from his books.
I had to whittle it down. It was difficult, but I went with Stand By Me.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Obviously, it's one of the greatest films ever made.
What decade was that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's actually based on a book which is a different title called The Body, and it's actually known in some places as A Fall from Innocence, which I think is a much better title.
So it's called The Body in like the UK.
It's a short story, called The Body, but in other places, in somewhere in Europe and America and stuff, it's called Fall from Innocence.
That's much better. Yeah. The Body's a bit bland.
Very. But Stand By Me is fantastic. It's up there with like The Goonies and The Gremlins and that sort of feel to it. And you're not a fan, are you, Ben?
I don't like the film. I've never read the book.
Oh. Adam, do you like the film?
It's my number two.
Oh, there you go.
Big fan of the book, big fan of the film. Kiefer Sutherland's performance in the film, you're very young, brilliant.
Corey Feldman,
fantastic. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the film and I'm a huge fan of the book. I mean, Stephen King is one of those writers whose work generally gets adapted quite well to screen. Genuinely.
Wait till you see Finner. Yeah,
fair enough. It's in there as well.
Nice. It was really hard, wasn't it? Because obviously he's done stuff like Shawshank and everything. It's really difficult to try and whittle it down.
It is, yeah.
He's one of those, because I'm not a big fan of his books. That's not to say they're not good, I've just never read that many. He's one of them that I'll see a film and then years later down the line someone will go, oh, that's from a Stephen King book, and I'll go, was it? And I'll have no idea. Like, I didn't know Shawshank was until probably about 4 or 5 years ago.
And The Mist.
Crazy. Yeah.
Shame.
So is it my number one?
It is.
I wanted to go for something slightly different because the other two have been entirely fiction. This is based on a sort of semi-fictional book. This is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Brilliant.
Which is a superb
good
film.
Choice.
And it's based on the book of the same name by Hunter S. Thompson. And for those who don't know, Hunter S. Thompson was a journalist. He invented the concept of gonzo journalism, which is to say getting out there and putting yourself in the middle of the story. So Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is a thinly veiled true story where he uses his alter ego, Raoul Duke, to mean himself. And it's about him and his lawyer going on this wild road trip to Las Vegas and taking as many drugs as the human body can possibly take. And it's a wacky, wild, brilliant book. And for my money, Hunter S. Thompson's an absolute no-fooling genius. And the film's a great version of it, because not only does it contain one of Johnny Depp's all-time greatest performances, but it's also a brilliant directorial performance from Terry Gilliam, who is just the perfect match of director and material, because with the best will in the world, Terry Gilliam is a mental case, and he makes bizarre films, so he was perfect for Fear and Loathing.
I think that was one of the last performances by Johnny Depp that was any good.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think now. When was Johnny Depp's last good film? Anyone?
Nope.
I think it will be when he comes back to do Yoga Hosers, the follow-up to Tusk.
I don't think it will be.
That'll be the one that puts him back on the map.
Mm.
Yeah, no sure. Tim Burton on that. Weird.
Blockbuster.
Number one time for me. Have a guess, boys.
Jurassic Park.
God, he knows me far too well. Yeah. Jurassic Park, Michael Crichton. Read it at school,
you
actually, in secondary school.
Jurassic Park, The Lost World.
Yeah, Jurassic Park 3. But yeah, read it at school. Love the cover. You know, it's one of the best logos ever, isn't it, for a film and a book?
Yeah.
A lot of people criticised the follow-up. Was it The Lost World? They said that it was nothing like the film, which is a good thing because the film's absolutely dog shit.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to the Jurassic World, and I'm hoping that will be hopefully the sequel we should have got.
I can't remember if I've mentioned this before on the podcast. I probably have. But I remember I was seeing a girl at the time, and we saw Jurassic Park 2, The Lost World. And afterwards, she said she didn't like it. And she turned to me and said, oh, yeah, I thought the bit where the dinosaur got loose in New York was a bit far-fetched. So the bit where they brought dinosaurs back to life was fine.
If it's set in a futuristic amusement park, it's fine.
It's fine.
Not with her anymore then, though.
No.
Take to see Inception.
Shame.
No, but I mean, I'm a huge fan of Billy and the Clonosaurus as well.
Who isn't? Is it number one time for you, Adam? Last one.
It is, and you've mentioned there about how it's difficult to narrow down a Stephen King book, and I've actually chosen two in my top three. The Green Mile is
that's seven
number
books.
One. It's published as a few, but it was
it's
condensed
allowed,
into
yeah.
one
Fair
eventually,
enough.
About 30 years later. But no, I love The Green Mile, and it, as a film as well. I mean, it's two of the greatest acting performances opposite each of them, Michael Clarke Duncan and Tom Hanks. Ben, no, you're not a huge fan of Tom Hanks.
Well, I am now, but I wasn't back then, and I don't think I've rewatched the film since. I remember it being quite good, but it was just his "I don't think it did it at all" voice that just went through me.
Well,
you know, if you do have a spare 4 hours, please feel free to watch it again.
Will do.
But no, I mean, the book is fantastic. There are some various differences within it. The book sort of takes place over a bit of a longer time, but generally, the core of the story is the same. It's Frank Darabont who, just when he adapts something from a comic book like The Walking Dead, or a Stephen King book like The Mist, or something like that, he generally keeps the core of everything the same and does it very
apart
well.
Apart from the ending, but yeah,
with The Mist, he actually changed the ending around, and Stephen King preferred The Mist.
Yeah,
the
film fair ending, play to him,
as we spoke about previously. But yeah, I mean, I love Stephen King's The Green Mile book series, and as a film, it's a great piece of work. It is, and we use this word a lot, it's a masterpiece for me. So Mark, have we had anything come through on the social media channels?
Absolutely loads. So Rich Walker at Whiskey Rich has gone with Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings and The Hunger Games.
All the franchises.
Yeah, and all more than one book.
Yeah, that's about 16 books all in.
Angela at Wizzy Mop 68, Jaws. Oh,
yeah,
I missed that. Silence of the Lambs.
Course.
And American Psycho.
Red Dragon.
Oh,
I love them both.
Mm-hmm. Stinkin' Thinkin', which is at Ken, that's his name, at Ken Raves. Children of Men, Starship Troopers, and Sorcerer's Stone.
Cool.
Jamie Dodger, at JCW Dodger. Harry Potter, Maze Runners, and Hunger Games. I don't agree with that.
Again, like 11 books.
Yeah. Matthew Fisher, which is at Couch Potato _MVP. The Time Machine, Blade Runner and Lord of the Rings. A lot of love for Lord of the Rings.
I wouldn't say Time Machine.
No. The film's garbage, isn't it?
That's what I mean. I love the book, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Kaylee Hadley, at Kaylee Hadley. Nice. Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Forrest Gump. Oh, mm. Ben doesn't like that. And The Exorcist.
I didn't even know that was a book, actually.
And The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a follow-up called Gump & Co.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, is that true?
Christ. Yeah.
Oh.
How have they not made the shit film to go with that, then?
Because the little kid in, what's it called? Forrest Gump? He's probably about 40 now, isn't he? You know, the little kid is done, and it's all about his life story. So, yeah. Warren John Hughes, at Warren John Hughes. Trainspotting, Clockwork Orange, and Where the Wild Things Are. I yeah. love Where the Wild Things Are. Everyone's slagged it off, but I love that film.
No, you know, I never saw the film. I love the book, though. It's only 9 pages long, I think, but it's a great book.
Yeah, it's my biggest book I've ever read. We've also got some on Instagram. This is new to... This is a first for us. We've got questions and answers from there. We've got Dobbin77, who's gone Born Identity,
yeah,
Hunger Games, and Carrie, a great Stephen King. Mm-hmm.
Do they respond with words, or do they send us pictures?
No,
of
no,
books?
They respond with words. It's, you can do it's amazing. Either way. Yeah, send us pictures of books. Why not?
That'd be awesome.
Lord Tammy's 16 with Lord of the Rings, Life of Pi, and Shining. The Shining.
Yeah. Life of Pi is a god awful film.
Dreadful.
I think you liked it. I didn't. I'm sure you liked Life of Pi.
No.
It's one of the tiger, like and, tiger in the boat. I'm sure you liked it.
No. Change I said the 3D was really good.
Yeah.
Danny 84, Jurassic Park.
Awesome.
High Fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
Shawshank.
Yeah.
And a special mention to Ender's Game. Oh, you see, he was doing well then. He ended it with that.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have ended it with that.
Brilliant.
And the last one, Queen Liosca, Hunger Games, Ender's Game, and Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, that's a great film. I've never read the book, but it's a great film.
Great stuff. So how can people get in touch with us on Twitter then, guys?
They just log on to Twitter.
Yeah, and find us at STTE Podcast.
Yeah.
Facebook.
Facebook.com/skiptheendpodcast.
Instagram.
Skip to the End Podcast.
And of course, you can email us if you're that archaic with podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Yeah.
So, new topic. Ben, is it your turn? I can't remember. I lose track. It's you, isn't it, now?
It is my turn, yeah. I came up with an idea for a topic last week, and I was really proud of myself. Came up with a great one, thought, you've nailed it, Ben. You have nailed it. And then I was looking at our Facebook, and there was a chap on there who had actually simultaneously come up with the same topic as a question for us, but I came up with it the day before him, so I won.
So basically, this guy came on our Facebook, Ben copied it because he hadn't got an idea, and then just blagged it.
So wait, is this one of the listener questions for later?
No, this is the topic that I came up with independently and first.
Go on then, what's this topic?
The topic is top 3 cameos in movies.
Okay, nice.
Cool. So who was the chap who came up with that also on our Facebook?
Give me a sec. It is Warren John Hughes.
Excellent.
New listener, so nice.
Great minds, Warren John Hughes. So we're going to do top 3 cameos, and we can be a bit loose with this. It's however we want to define what a cameo is. So it can be people who are in one or two scenes. It can be people who are uncredited. It can be people who were credited in the end, but they were sort of a surprise. They weren't credited in advance. We can play it however we want. One of us will probably say something that's ludicrous, and it'll be their Sandman moment, but that's fine. We'll
Johnny
roll with
Depp
it.
In Tusk.
Mark's going to say Matt Damon, Interstellar.
Nice.
Yeah. But no, I'd say that, I would argue, probably is valid because it was kind of leaked just before the film came out that he was in it. And even though he has quite a major role, he was uncredited.
Yeah.
So I would kind of argue that was a cameo. But
so we
know,
can, as long as we can justify it,
as long as we
week,
can justify
we're sorted.
It. Exactly. Top
nice.
3 cameos.
Accepted.
So, chaps, I thought it was about time that we had a new feature. So there I was, sitting on a train, and I was just thinking that we needed something new, something fresh, something just something new, spice it up a bit. So I've come up with this new feature. It's called Skip Back in Time.
Okay.
What we're going to do, we're going to pick the year that we're currently in and work our way back. And basically, all we do is pick our favourite film from that year. At the moment, it's going to be quite obvious. We know what probably 2014, kind of 13 on, you know, those sort of years we've discussed previously. But I'm looking forward to kind of 20 episodes down the line when we get to talk about the 80s films and 90s. And it'd be really interesting to kind of justify why we picked that.
That sounds cool.
So each week we're going to pick a year and go back a year at a time, hence the name Skip Back in Time, see what we did there. And we will then talk about our favourite films from that particular year. So as Mark said, we're not going to belabour sort of 2014 and 2013 too much because we've covered those on recent episodes. So just to get the ball rolling, shall we get those out of the way?
Yeah.
And just to give our listeners a sort of an indication of how we're going to do this, when we've previously given our best films of the year, we've gone by UK release date. But for the purposes of this feature, we're not going to do that. We're going to go by the official date on IMDb. So if you search for a particular film on IMDb, next to the title, there will be a date in brackets, a year in brackets. That is the year we're going to go by for the purposes of this feature. So shall we just give the people, just to get the ball rolling, what our 2014 and 2013 picks would be, and then we start the feature properly on the next episode with 2012?
Definitely. And I think what's really interesting as well is we actually, towards the end of last year, didn't we? We put out our favourite film.
Yeah.
But I think I've actually changed mine since then. So it's been quite nice to go back and actually skip back in time and just check that I made the right choice. So
nicely done.
Let's do this then. 2014 on IMDb. That's
on
what we're definitely
IMDb,
going with.
Not by UK release date, on IMDb, yep.
I'm putting it out there straight away. Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's an excellent choice. And again, we're not going to discuss these now.
No.
We've covered these in detail.
That's fine.
My one, which theoretically is going to end up on my end of year poll come the end of 2015, but because of its official IMDb date, my favourite film of 2014 is Whiplash.
Nice.
Nice.
Awesome, awesome film. Don't need to talk about it right now. We covered it to death.
Yep.
I mean, I love Whiplash. I love Guardians. Probably Captain America, Winter Soldier, 2014.
Wow. That's overtaken Guardians as your favourite Marvel film.
I think it's just because I've watched it recently.
Yeah.
If I put Guardians on, I'll probably be like, oh, no, hell no, Guardians.
Yeah.
But
that's the thing about these lists, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can change your mind so easily.
Leaving Boyhood out was not easy.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched Cap 2 recently and I was just like blown away again. It's that spy thriller, but I'm not going to talk about it too much.
Okay.
2013, I'm not changing Her.
Me too, Her.
Her's great and I love Her as a film, but as an experience in the cinema, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Wow, okay. Interesting pick. Have you not?
I've never seen it, no.
It's a great movie, great story, and the effects, etc., brilliant, and the sound, amazing.
So, basically, next week, guys, 2012.
Yeah.
I don't mean the film 2012, that's a masterpiece, but that's it. Think about it, we're going to come back, and we're going to... That is, I want a justification.
Oh, yeah.
There needs to be a bit of a war. I want arguments. I want you to really, really, like, justify why you've picked this.
And this is going to be great because since we've been doing this podcast for sort of 7 going on 8 months, we've talked a lot about films from the last year and the year before, but we've not really talked about films from 2012, 2011, 2010, etc. So we'll really get into it starting on the next episode. Our review this week is Fast and Furious 7.
What?
Yeah, Fast and Furious 7.
But wasn't it supposed to be Insurgent?
Well, you see, it was. If you listened to the previous episode, which I'm sure you did, and if you didn't, why not, you would have heard that we were going to review Insurgent, the second film in the Divergent series of movies. But thanks to our connections at Universal Movie Studios, we were invited to an early press showing of Fast and Furious 7, which we attended at the BFI IMAX in London. And so we thought, well, if we have that kind of access these days, we might as well use it to our advantage. So we're reviewing Fast and Furious 7 instead of Insurgent.
You guys,
shame.
You guys better have watched Divergent. Because I would rock paper scissors not to.
Yeah, we did, didn't we, Mark? We got together and watched Detergent, whatever it's called.
Intergent, yeah.
I'm expecting a review on skiptotheend.co.uk then.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's been absolutely unbelievable to not have to watch that piece of shit. And I know people are sitting there probably going, no, it's really good. It's up there with the likes of, what's that other crap that teenagers
Hunger
love?
Hunger Games.
Yeah, that sort of. And the other one, what's the one with the...
Vampire.
Yeah.
What's Twilight.
Twilight. But it's been absolutely awesome to not have to sit and watch that film because, let's be honest about it, let's do this now. Fast 7.
Yeah.
Or Fast and Furious 7, whatever it's called. IMAX, boys. That was your first experience, right? And the London IMAX.
It was the first time at the London IMAX, yeah.
What did you think?
Jesus Christ.
It's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
like,
a bit.
Insane.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. The screen is ridiculous.
You can't really... I mean, I'm not dissing the building in any way, but if you were sitting in the front half of the auditorium, I don't know how you could have got it all in your peripheral vision. You have to really be sitting halfway up and further back to actually get it all in your field of view because it's so big.
Yeah. I went there to see The Dark Knight, and I went there to see Up, and it's such a come down now to know we've got to go and watch a normal film in a normal cinema, and we're still spoilt. We get nice digital, really good quality, but that was an experience in itself.
Yeah, it was. It was really cool.
It was ludicrous. I just thought the sound, the picture, everything, the cinema, it was the biggest cinema I've ever been in.
Yeah, is it? Am I right in thinking it's the biggest screen in Europe? Yeah, that is crazy.
Right, let's talk Fast 7 now. Yeah. I was a massive fan of Fast 5. I don't think I've seen them all. There's like Tokyo Drift and stuff like that. There's a couple I missed out on. I lose track.
Mm.
But when we obviously spoke to the guys at Universal and we got to go and see this film early, I was loving life because I thought Fast 5 was not a masterpiece, but I thought it was a really entertaining, spot-on movie that just was made for beer and pizza and mm-hmm. just a really good experience to be in the cinema, action all the way through. Fast 6, I loved as well. I thought it was brilliant. And obviously, we need to touch on this, that Paul Walker unfortunately died. And I think this film was put back a year, am I right?
Yeah, they were halfway through filming when he died and they had to sort of go on to hiatus for a year.
So to know it didn't get completely cancelled and they still magically brought this movie to us, it was such a relief because I knew that, you know, the rest of the cast were really big on putting this film out because mm-hmm. it's such a, you know, big dedication to him. But yesterday we went to that cinema and sat there for over 2 hours and I don't think there's been it might have been since the original Transformers that I've been that entertained solidly for 2 hours. Action, action, action. Wow.
Yeah, it was wall-to-wall action. Similarly to you, I've not seen all of them. In fact, I had never seen a Fast and Furious film until Fast 5, and I only watched it because The Rock was in it. So I watched that, loved it. He was great, the film was great, and then 6 was even better. So I was genuinely excited to be seeing this one and then see it on the IMAX screen as well, all hell. But truly, it was wall-to-wall action. You know, we're going to be talking about spoilers here, guys, so, you know, be aware. But the film opens with a scene where Jason Statham's character, Deckard Shaw, is in the hospital with his brother, I think it's Owen Shaw, who was played by Luke Evans in the last film, and he obviously got his ass whooped by the Fast and Furious team. And Statham's character, he basically walks out of this hospital having murdered 24 mercenaries. He then basically chucks some sort of bomb behind him. The hospital pretty much explodes and he walks out, puts his shades on, gets into this fast car and drives off. And immediately, within 2 minutes of the film starting, they had me by the balls. I was like, yeah, I'm going to like this. I'm going to enjoy it. And it did not relent from that point forward. It was just wall-to-wall action. It was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you talk then about like the scene in the hospital and that's amazing. But then the next time we see him, he's sitting at The Rock's desk.
He's hacking his computer, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, hacking his computer. And then we get a fight scene between Jason Statham and Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah.
Is there anything cooler than that?
It's a teenage boy's wet dream, I think. And mine.
It's awesome. The Rock bottoms him through a table.
Yeah.
It's literally everything I want from an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fight was unreal, and I'll be honest, like the directing was really, really good. We'll talk about it more in more detail later, but that fight scene was so intense, and the way it was edited, you felt you were there. The sound of the punches and the smashes through the table, like you said. Wow.
One bit of camera work that really impressed me, I think it was Hobbs kicks Deckard Shaw over, and as he rolls backwards, the camera rolls with him.
Yeah.
And just for an action sequence, it just had this really cool effect on it.
He did a similar thing when Rock does the Rock Bottom to Statham through the table, because as he hoists him in the air and then brings him down, the camera went up and twisted round to follow the trajectory. The direction by James Wan all the way through it is really high calibre. Action directing is bloody hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, you get people like Michael Bay who just do the same old shit in every film.
Massive explosion.
Exactly, yeah. But people who actually have a love and a caring for the art form can do really special things with it, and I really think James Wan's done that, which is all the more surprising seeing as he's primarily a horror director known for the Saw franchise.
Yeah, what a jump.
Yeah.
You know, Saw, yeah, it's quite gruesome, but there's not much in that. You wouldn't think that's the same guy at all.
No.
Hats off to him.
Oh, definitely. And I'm very similar to Mark here. Like, I'd only ever seen the first Fast and Furious film.
Mm-hmm.
So I had no idea what to expect. I enjoyed the first Fast and Furious film, but as much as you can enjoy an action film in that vein, I guess. But watching this, I mean, I think my overlying thought was this film has no right to be as good as it is.
Yeah.
Like thinking about as a cinema goer, quite an avid cinema goer, things like Fast and Furious get a, a bum rap. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, there are action films for people, action films, whatever. But this film is good, genuinely good.
Yeah, it's not good for what it is or good for this type of film. It's just good.
It's genuinely good. And I was very pleased sitting there watching it. And I think the whole film is added to being at that giant IMAX screen with the surround sound, everything there. It's just perfect.
Yeah.
I think what was really good about it is that everyone delivered a really good performance. Now, don't get me wrong, they're not going to get Oscars for this, but everyone was convincing. Like, mm-hmm. Jason Statham, I'm not a massive fan. I think he's great in Snatch and stuff like that. And is it The Transporter?
Yeah.
And it's all right, but I just got a bit bored of him. But to see him in this, he was superb, and he needs the credit for this. He was unbelievable. And obviously, Kurt Russell...
Yeah.
I was majorly impressed.
He should always have a beard, though, in my opinion. He should always have that big beard for, like, The Thing. But brilliant in it, again.
I think he should always have an eye patch.
Definitely. But, you know, the Vin Diesel, again, was superb. And I just believed in them all. And I think they get the right balance of kind of humour. So you're laughing at parts, which are way over the top. I mean, there's a one scene. This isn't a spoiler because you've probably seen it in the trailer and everything. The car goes through an actual building, goes through like a skyscraper, isn't it? And then through another building. Then it carries on going and goes through another. And everyone was clapping in the cinema because it was just so ridiculous, but fun and enjoyable. They get a real serious element of the film when there's obviously talking about the love and the
family.
Yeah, and the morals and stuff that go with it. But you also got the action, you got the violence. It felt like an 80s action film at some parts, with like sort of Commando or, you know, Terminator. It really did, especially with that droid thing, sort of, you know, what was it towards the end?
Oh, the drone.
The drone, sorry. Yeah. That was insane. Yeah. Like, the special effects on that were up there with some of the best action films I've seen.
They were great. I think you've nailed it a bit with the acting there. If you look at, let's take Jason Statham, Vin Diesel and Dwayne Johnson. They're never going to win an Oscar between them, I wouldn't have thought. But all three of them have a particular niche at what they're good at. And if you hire one of them to do their thing, you're going to get something good. But to have all three, to have Statham being the sort of taciturn, arse-kicking Cockney, you know, brilliant, get him in. You've got Vin Diesel being the block of granite that he is, and then you've got The Rock being the sort of winking, smirking badass. If you've got all three of them in one film, you're onto a winner.
That's it. It's Statham being paid to be Statham.
Yeah.
It's Dwayne The Rock Johnson being paid to be Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. It's great. And the acting, like Mark said, it's good acting. They're never going to win an Oscar, like you say, but it's good acting. And Tyrese Gibson sums it up as Roman Pierce.
Yeah.
One of the funniest characters I've seen on screen.
Oh, he's great, isn't he?
A lot of the sort of comedy element came from him. There's a fantastic scene where after they've all been picked up by special forces, they're coming up with a plan, and Roman Pierce says, well, why can't I never be the leader? I want to be the leader. I want to get the plan. And they go, okay, fine, you can create the plan. I wasn't saying now, just saying, you know, in future, I want to be the guy that makes the plan.
And then in the end, he does come up with a plan and it works, doesn't it? Yeah. But it's a great film. And we've mentioned the wall-to-wall action and the stunts. The stunt work that's gone into this film, like there's a particular stunt that involves several cars falling out of a plane. People were, you know, laughing out loud, but not like this is silly. They were laughing at how audacious it was. You know, you've never seen anything like that in the film. It was crazy. Not just, you know, the one Mark mentioned with the cars jumping from building to building, but falling out of a plane as well. It's insanity.
It was brilliant. And my heart was racing, you know, and they're coming closer and closer, and they got they then suddenly push this, it gives them extra big wheels as they land, just to kind of, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's so cool. Far-fetched, but you love it and you believe it. You're like, yeah, that would happen, that's fine, it can drop from the sky and land perfectly and the suspension will take that drop. You just put up with it. It's perfect.
But then in that plane scene, again, Roman Pierce, he doesn't want to come out of the plane, he's afraid of heights, and then eventually they force him out. And then I think there's a scene where they're all driving along brilliantly and his car just sort of flies across because it's still on the parachute.
It was a really funny film. The more I think about it, I was wetting myself at certain scenes. Mm. It was really good.
And that, the sort of the crazy end action scene that lasts probably 20, 25 minutes. One of the minor, it's not a criticism, it is what it is, but The Rock Jack's character, Hobbs, gets injured quite near the start of the film. So he's missing through the middle section, but then he comes back towards the end during the climactic action scene. And again, just an example of the humour, is that this drone gets shot down and it's got like a Gatling gun thing attached to the front, and The Rock just rips it off and just starts walking down the street holding this huge gun shooting down helicopters. And he's like, this is genius.
I think one of my favourite Rock parts as well is that because he's been badly injured, he's in hospital and he stands up with a big arm brace on him, all plastered up, and he kind of just tenses it and smashes it all. And it's just perfect, isn't it? It really is like spot on. I think you were saying earlier, Ben, about how the cast all really perform and just work. It's funny, really, because I watched the Expendables films, the 1, 2, and I think there's a third one. And they don't seem to have that same effect. So you get Statham, you get Stallone, you get all these amazing actors. But for me, that didn't really work. I wasn't as into it. I wasn't as pumped. But I think they just get the balance right on this. And there's just something missing in those expendable. You shouldn't be, because you're hearing about all these amazing casts. But they just got the... I think they are genuinely all really good mates and love being on set and love working together, because they are the perfect chemistry, isn't it? It really is. They all have banter. And
I think the thing with the Fast and Furious films is that the casts have grown organically. They've sort of got bigger each time. You know, so you had Vin Diesel in the first few. Then they brought in Rock later on in the series and he meshed in that particular role. Then in this last one, they were like, okay, we need a badass villain. Then they brought in Statham.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Expendables, it's like, can we find 12 people who used to be good in the 80s? Yeah. Here they are, put them in together. It'll be fine. And it doesn't work. There's no chemistry.
And you get the feeling that in the Expendables, everyone wants their moment. Whereas in this, you don't get that.
Paycheck.
Yeah, you don't get the idea that, you know, Vin Diesel and Paul Walker were arguing over who got more screen time.
No, certainly not.
You didn't get that.
No.
I want to discuss the Paul Walker bit now, because I don't think we can really just kind of shut it.
No, you can't over... You know.
I never... Because we luckily got to see this film a week before it came out to the cinema, I've not read any spoilers. I've not seen... All I knew is that someone said they wrap it up very nicely and respectfully and they won't have any more films now moving forward. So, Ben, you were pretty amazed by the way that the... Was it Peter Jackson's company you said dealt with the...
I think they call Weta Digital, something like that. And they did all the CGI, because apparently what they did is they got body doubles who were a couple of his brothers, and then they did a lot of CGI stuff, putting his face onto it. And we were discussing this yesterday as we were coming out of the cinema, saying how seamless it was. We were thinking, you know, he's in damn near the whole film. What could they have done with CGI? Yeah. But then it turns out that he died halfway through filming. And I actually managed to find a video on YouTube yesterday that showed some stuff where it was a body double. There's a bit, I think, when they first get to Abu Dhabi and they're sitting on beach chairs and they're just having a chat. And that whole scene, he wasn't really there. He was never in that particular scene. That was his body double and that was a CGI face. And you wouldn't have known.
No, not
well, no, that's news to me now. I didn't know. I thought he was in that part.
No.
And then when I think and I look back now, he didn't have many scenes of talking, did he? So you can probably, I wouldn't be surprised if, like you said, 50% of the film is him CGI'd over a top of a stunt double. But they did it really well and graceful at the end. And he's basically found love and he's got kids and that's what he wants to do. He wants to settle down and move away from all this sort of lifestyle. And he's on the beach and he's got his little daughter and his arm, because he's holding her up in the air and lovely little scene, is covering his face and it's his brother.
Yeah.
And he looks just like him, and you don't even question it. It's just really respectfully done. It isn't some tacky CGI or they talk about him and he's not in the scene. Like, oh, what's Paul up to now? You know, they do it really, really well. And we can spoil this because people will hopefully come back and listen to this after we've done it. But the end scene is obviously him and Vin Diesel, and Vin is very big on publicly saying it was his best mate. You know, they're not just working on this film together. Family. They hung out all the time. And the end of the film is them driving off and they're kind of looking at each other. The way that was filmed was perfect. And you knew that he just basically imposed it on top of her car, but it looked seamless.
One of the things that people were suspicious of or questioned before the film came out was, were they going to kill off Paul Walker's character in the film? Which I never thought they would do, because just how inappropriate would it be to kill it? In a film that's about fast cars and has crashes, how inappropriate would it be to kill him off when that's really what happened to him? So the fact that they've had to put production back a year and do all this extra CGI work, it makes perfect sense that they would effectively retire him rather than kill him. I don't think that was ever an option.
I think what you said on the way back to the car yesterday, you're saying that you can imagine them still leaving it open for another film, because obviously Jason Statham's character's been locked away in prison, but he gives that look of, I've still got unfinished business. And I do hope in a couple of years they maybe do a spin-off or they do something, because that was a really good battle and I kind of feel like that could continue.
They could easily do a spin-off because, as you just say, Jason Statham was put in prison at the end of it, and he was put in prison specifically by The Rock. None of the other Fast and Furious guys were there. It was Hobbs taking Shaw to the prison. And Shaw was like, you know, this won't hold me. You know, I'll get out of here. And Rock was like, yeah, if you can get through 30 metres of concrete, I'll be waiting for you. So they've set it up perfectly for a Statham versus Rock film somewhere down the line.
And
that
who
would, be, that would Oh, I'd pay twice as much as normal to see that. That would be great. But it wouldn't be a Fast and Furious film. It would be its own thing, but connected to the same universe.
Universal, if you're listening to this, do it soon.
And we want some sort of fee for giving you the idea.
One of the things that I really like as well, and this is something that I don't usually like, when celebrities just kind of get thrown into films for no reason.
Yeah.
And there's a bit with Iggy Azalea at the start, which I wasn't a fan of, but then Ronda Rousey's in it as well.
Yeah.
And that's very good. The way they've done that was very good. She has a fight with Michelle Rodriguez, and it's just very well done.
Yeah.
Usually when they start throwing people in like that, it doesn't work.
For those of you who don't know, Ronda Rousey is the UFC women's champion, and she is a stone-cold badass.
Bantamweight, I think, isn't she?
I don't know the exact weight category, but I know that she's a badass, and I know that if you get in the octagon with her, you're getting your arm broken in about 30 seconds. So the fight she has with Michelle Rodriguez was choreographed brilliantly. It looked like a real brawl.
Yeah, and you could tell how talented she is just by the fact that the fight scene was choreographed that well.
Yeah, not a natural actress by any means, but a hell of a fighter.
Yeah, but you could see that she had probably had some input in the fight scene as well.
The question I wanted to put out to you both, it's one of those ones that I think it's like Marmite, you do or you don't, but is Michelle Rodriguez fit? I can't decide.
Yeah, she is.
There's something about her that's gorgeous, but there's also something about her that I'm like, ugh.
The way I would put it diplomatically is that she's a bit tomboyish.
Yeah,
there are scenes in that film where when they go to the party in Abu Dhabi and she's got her makeup on and is a nice dress and she's a gorgeous, beautiful woman. But more often than not, she's tomboyish. And I don't just mean in this film, I mean in real life as well. You know, I don't know if you guys remember when she played Ana Lucia in Lost. And she was the same in that. She's just a generally sort of tomboyish woman, I think.
Yeah. So in my opinion, I think that's probably the best Fast and Furious film that I've seen.
Yeah.
Not just because we went to the IMAX. Like, when you think, there's not many films that get to the seventh, excluding Police Academy Mission to Moscow, that
classic
has always got better. Mm-hmm. You know, Carry On 7 dropped for me. I'm sorry, but that's the film where it saw 7. I'm sick of it. I don't want to see it anymore.
What about Leprechaun 7?
Well, yeah, okay, you've picked three that are great. But on this occasion, this is the best for me. And if they do end it on this, they've gone out on the highest that they could. Mm-hmm. It's trying to rate this film. I'm not going to do it on the way of comparing it to something like Her. I'm doing it for what we want from it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go straight out there now and give it an 8 out of 10 because I was entertained. There's not going to be many action films that are going to live up to that now, and it was a perfect send-off for Paul.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, as I say, I've only seen the last three, all three of which I've enjoyed, and I think they have upped the ante in terms of the stakes involved and in terms of the stunts and the fight scenes and whatnot. This is undoubtedly the best of the last three, and I would wager the best of all seven. I really enjoyed it. It's an 8 for me as well.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I mean, to be honest with you, as an action film, for me, it's probably around about an 8. But as a film, it's a 7, just in general. I really did enjoy the film, and I'm actually going to just judge it as a film and just say it's 7 out of 10.
Fair enough. And that gives it an overall skip to the end score of 8 out of 10.
This is something a bit different to what we normally do on our podcast. We do an MCM podcast, which we spend hours and hours interviewing loads of celebrities. Recently, we got to speak to the guys from Walking Dead, Sleepy Hollow, and that's all on Podomatic and iTunes, so go and check it out. But for our own episode this time round, for me personally, I got to meet one of my idols. It's Matt from Funeral for a Friend. I used to love the band back in the day, and they've always stuck with me and always released really good albums. And I know that both of you have listen to some of their stuff, not as hardcore fan as me, but we got to interview him and go to the most recent gig in Nottingham. And we basically sat down and talked everything that we'd normally talk to between ourselves in a pub. So great. Here it is.
Okay, so we're here with Matt from Funeral for a Friend. So thank you for joining us, Matt.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Midway through a tour, how's it going?
Really good. I mean, we're... I think we're that age now as a band. I mean, we're almost in our 15th year that we just kind of do casual touring. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. It's just we do weekends and then right. kind of spend the weekdays at home. But no, it's cool. It's been fun.
So are you all now sort of married with kids? Is that why you do the weekends?
More or less. I mean, you know, I've got like a wife and 9 cats and 2 rabbits. So for me, that's the closest I get to domestic bliss. But yeah, we've all got relationships, you know, and families and stuff. So... you know, we kind of know where our band is and what we want from our band and how we want to work it, so we're able to afford ourselves some time to chill and
definitely
enjoy real life.
Doing it 14 years doing it, then naturally that's what you're going to want, aren't you?
I mean it's cool. I mean, I like being busy, I like, you know, touring, I like traveling around, but it's also nice to be able to kind of balance that with home life.
Very good. I'm going to throw it out there already. Right, on our podcast, nearly every, well, it's our theme going forward. We do our top 5 horrors, we do our top 5 comedies, we're going through everything.
You should have told me this in about a month.
We do have a week to prepare in between, so we spend a lot of thought into this, but I'm going to go all out there now, right?
Right.
Top 5 films of all time.
God, let's see if you can do it.
You're on stage in 2 hours. Just
Well, Blue Velvet has got to be one, because that is my perfect David Lynch film. Mm-hmm. So what else would it have to be after that? It probably would be, and this is going to be a weird one, but The Princess Bride.
Nice.
I want the explanation to go with this.
Big Andre the Giant fan.
I mean, it's one of those, you know, it's, when you're growing up, it's just one of those... you know, growing up in the 80s, you experienced a lot of kind of like fantasy genre movies like Dragon Slayer and stuff like that. Things that a lot of kids these days don't even get to fully comprehend because it's all laid out for them, you know, films like Willow. But Princess Bride had just that weird quirkiness to it, that just real sarcastic, biting humor that was just, I'd never experienced before as a kid. You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, Mandy Patinkin is, you know, Inigo Montoya, just the whole thing, the old flamboyance of it just was just like captivating. And even as an adult, when you come back to those films, it still means something to you, you know? So I judge movies that I really love by that point that, you know, as a 35-year-old, I can watch a film that I loved as like an 8-year-old and be like, still got it. Still got it. So that's 2. Oh, God. It was obviously Days of Heaven by Terrence Malick, because as a, you know, I studied cinematography in film school, and I'm massively into photography, so the visual elements, poetic elements of his movies really stand out to me. And that, you know, the shots and the whole kind of magic hour moments in that movie just are just mind-blowing. You know, whenever I have a movie night where I have friends of mine come over, that's usually a movie that we just throw on, because it's just, you can get lost in it. And I just love those movies like that where you can just, and even though the dialogue is so sparse, you just kind of, you feel like you're immersed in something really ridiculously special. So for me, that's a big one.
Two more.
Halloween.
Nice.
Halloween.
Yeah, Hunter's God.
Yes, pretty much, because I used to hate horror films when I was a kid. I mean, they terrify. When my parents used to watch them, I got a VHS van that used to come around and like have VHSs rented out the back of this van. You know, my parents used to, you know, get the kids' film, which my brother and I would watch, and then they'd get a film for themselves, which after we'd gone to bed, they would watch. And it, like, everything from RoboCop to Aliens to things like that. You know, my parents would watch, and I would sneak. You know. Get up early the next morning and just be like, me and my brother would be like, you know, put it on the first 10 minutes of these movies, just literally just like shocked, you know, and terrified for weeks. Nightmares. My parents couldn't really fully understand why we'd have so many nightmares, but down to the video van. So we, and when Halloween came out, when I turned 18 and I got my opportunity to go to Blockbusters and give my details and be like, sign me up, I want to rent all your movies. I went straight to the horror section and they had Halloween 1, they had Halloween 2, so I got both. And I just remember just being the, all the lights out, just putting it on VHS, proper VHS in there. And just the music, it was just, that's what really spun me out. Because if you dissect it now, and as I've done many times, it's not a really, really scary film. The music and just really ups the ante of suspense in that. You know what I mean? It's just the way it just creeps in, the whole synth vibe of it, you know, and that's one of Carpenter's kind of so many strengths, is in that kind of way of elaborately kind of drawing you into the tension, not through the visuals to such, but just the way the music complements everything. And it's why I love The Fog as well, because it's just fuck, you know. It's
we just talk John Carpenter for the next
hour. It's so good. I mean, it's to the point where Halloween is a key film in terms of my love of horror, because it just totally just made me get it. I got it for the first time. You know, as a kid, I was like terrified, and I was determined to reassess my stance with horror films. And it just spun me. I literally went down the next day, got everything from Friday the 13th, all these kind of movies. I was going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But Halloween stays true as being one of the ones that I can consistently watch every year. I mean, I can put it on every year and be like, I love this. The moments in these movies are just, especially the first two, are just stupendously good.
I guarantee you went and bought the Blu-ray Steelbook for the 35th anniversary.
No, I bought the Scream Factory. I've had all the various
box
versions.
Set.
I've got the complete box set, which I sneaked past my wife. because it's, you know, I had all the different versions. I've actually got the single versions of the Halloween films as well. Like, so just, I have got the Steelbook. But for me, it's one of those series that, you know, keeps on kind of delivering so many good things, you know, even the lesser movies, if you want to, you know, call them that, because I think they complement each other so well. Even three, I mean, I deliberately avoided watching three for the longest time because I had nothing to do with Michael Myers, and I felt that Halloween had everything to do with Michael Myers, but that's not necessarily true. I watched three for the first time Halloween last year. This is crazy how long I've gone without watching this film. And I was just totally blown away by it. I was just like, this is a really fucking cool little story. It's the main act, I can't remember the character's name, but the old guy who runs the mask company, he is he's more creepier than Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Incredibly so. I mean, it's just something about, I mean, you'd think like a mask is going to just, you know, creep you the fuck out, like nothing behind, just blackness behind the eyes, but this guy just, you know, the way he interacts with the actors and the other characters and the dialogue and the inflections is just, man, he was so fucking creepy. It's unbelievable. And that song, oh man, you know. Yeah, actually, I work in a record store part-time, so for me, as soon as I saw we had Death Waltz vinyl reissues of the soundtracks, I bought Halloween 2, I bought Halloween 3, and I bought The Fog. Gatefold things, because I love these. These are just as important as the movies themselves. Right, last one.
I'm still picturing someone coming in and say, "Excuse me, mate, have you got a Funeral for a Friends album?" You'd be like,
"Yes, that's me." all right, last word.
No pressure now after that big speech about Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, Halloween is a big, big deal. I'm trying to think. I'm really trying to think. I won't do this list justice. My sick.
You're guaranteed you'll always find one afterwards.
Oh, there's so many. There's so many. I mean, you know, I spent so many years just, I watch movies, I love movies, so for me it always changes depending on my mood.
You'll be on stage tonight and you just think, why did I say that?
Mid-song.
I might say something on the microphone about it as well. Alright, Dial M for Murder.
Nice.
Nice.
Are you sure?
I mean, it was either that or Rear Window, and I think a lot of people go Rear Window because I mean, I love Jimmy Stewart. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jimmy Stewart is quite possibly my first experience of a cinematic icon that I could identify with, but just I could iconically, growing up, you know, see as being somebody special, quite unique. Because I mean, my parents used to watch The Death Out of It's a Wonderful Life. and even to the point where I got bored of it, then fell in love with it again. But Grace Kelly, Ray Milland, Diane for Murder, incredibly, incredibly creepy in another different way. But I just love the dynamic between Milland's kind of subtly, kind of like knowing, yeah, I know my wife is having an affair, but I'm just going to be really kind of like, think about it, and then I'm going to try to kill you. I mean, I think some people don't rate it as highly as other Hitchcock movies, but I think it's so carefully plotted and so well constructed that I find it hard to not appreciate it in a way that it's just very, a great little suspense film, you know. I mean, it's very claustrophobic because it's based in like the apartment, basically. I just love films that kind of like can move around in such a, in not very many locations, and I think Hitchcock was a complete genius about that. You know, look at Rear Window, for instance. Yeah. That's probably the reason why that's so high. You know, it doesn't really go anywhere in terms of like taking you to Mount Rushmore, you know, and stuff, north and northwest, and all these great locations that you can paint on a backdrop and kind of slap up there and put Cary Grant in front of and be like, yeah, this is budget right now. But I just think, you know, Dilemma is just one of those films that stands out for me.
Well, guys, I don't know about you, but that was an unbelievable talk. And, you know, to meet one of my kind of idols and a front man of one of the best British bands around was just superb, wasn't it?
It was great to talk to him. He's clearly a real film buff. This is a guy who knows what he's talking about. And I must admit that at the time when he was telling us his favourite films, I was nodding along. But there's a couple I hadn't heard of, I'll be honest with you, which just displays gaps in my knowledge. So I'm going to go out and check those out. But he's a guy who really cares and really knows film deeply.
Yeah, he is. I mean, you just got that feeling from him. I mean, he seems to be interested in not just film, but all things film related. He mentioned to us, probably, I don't think it was actually on the interview, but about his photography work that he does and how he really enjoys sort of cameras and everything. So he clearly just enjoys all aspects of it as well. And he was just a really easygoing guy to talk to.
He's got a cool life as well. You know, he's a front man of a good band. He's a good photographer. He loves films. He works in a record shop. Wow.
Great to hear the tour's going well as well. And casually touring made me laugh. We only do weekends now.
That's a good life, isn't it? And Adam, you've actually done a review of the gig we went to, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It's on skiptotheend.co.uk, so check it out.
That's excellent. And the review we've put out there was sort of, what, about 10, 15 minutes long?
Yeah.
But how long did we get to speak to him?
Well, that's the thing. We went in there and I didn't want to try and take the piss and be there for too long, but I didn't even notice how long we were there for. I looked down, it was 50 minutes. And it, you know, the interview only ended because Matt had to go on stage and perform with the band. The best thing about this is I was going to chop this up to 10 minutes, put it on this and be like, how can we chop that near hour interview down to 10 minutes? And fair play, Ben. Tell him what you suggested.
Well, I suggested that we put out the bit with regards to movies that fits our podcast on our podcast, but then we put out the whole thing, the whole 45, 50-minute interview with Matt, out as a special podcast for our fans and for fans of the band. So that's going to go out on Bank Holiday Monday. And Matt not only discusses movies, he discusses his influences as a musician, which will be of great interest to Funeral for a Friend fans. He also discusses what sort of comic books he's into. He discusses gaming a little bit. It runs the whole gamut of pop culture. So it's a great interview to listen to, and that will be up on iTunes and Podomatic on Monday.
Recently, we've been giving quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we give a podcast every other week for free, but we started to throw in some of our own kind of prizes. Now, a couple of weeks back, we put a question out there, quite a simple question. All you have to do is tell us which was your favourite Turtlehead. Was it Michelangelo? Was it Raphael, Donatello, or Leonardo?
What was the first one you said?
I'm not saying it because I got it wrong.
Mike and Angelo.
Is that two?
A little couple of friends.
Yeah. And we had a really good response on Twitter. I was quite let down, if I'm honest, by the lack of hashtag Turtlehead. We're getting answers, but they weren't... I wanted it to trend.
Mm.
Shame.
But, you know, we appreciate everything you've done. So the first winner, we got two on DVD, Dave Scott, which is at Lonely God, and he's gone with Donatello.
It's all right. But he hashtag, not my favourite.
But... He hashtag Turtlehead, so he's good.
And Donatello is my favourite, so I'm happy with that.
So we're going to send you the Turtles on DVD. We'll pop that into a... envelope and send that to you soon. And we got another copy as well, and that was for Mike and Angelo. And they've put,
did he pick two?
This is somebody else. This is Wolf Nation Kylie, which is at Cupid Stupid Love Free. So you are going to also get a Turtlehead in the post.
I'm annoyed because Leonardo is my favorite and no one went with Leonardo.
Shame. Sorry. So Ben, remind me next week to pop those Turtleheads out and get them to those people straight away.
Who's your favorite? Well,
Mike and Angelo?
Yeah.
I'm annoyed because that means your two got chosen. Did you just select the people that chose your favourite turtles?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, if you're that upset, I can sort out a turtle just for you.
Thanks, Ben.
This time round, it was my choice for the rewatch. You basically, we had a really good run of some really good films. Then it all went a bit tits up. So we had Matrix Revolutions, which was disastrous.
Yeah, Ben.
That was pretty terrible. Then Adam kind of got a bit of revenge with, what title was it?
It's the other way around, but okay.
Okay, yeah. What was the other film?
I chose The Phantom Menace.
Which was appalling.
Yeah.
And then Ben chose...
Yeah.
Matrix Revolution.
By way
that.
Of revenge, yeah.
So it took a while, but I thought, I'll hold back. But then, nah, sod you both. Clerks 2. Now we know, and anyone that knows that listens to this, that I absolutely love Kevin Smith. He is a very good film director. He's a very good writer. His dialogue's up there with Tarantino.
Jesus Christ.
And I really wanted to see Ben... basically, have 2 hours of punishment.
Mark, we can't understand you with this shaft in your mouth.
So, I'm going to go straight to Ben and tell me what you thought of Clerks 2.
Well, for starters, you're out of your mind, boy, if you think he's a fantastic director and writer. His dialogue is atrocious. It's absolute puerile shit.
Not up there with Tarantino.
There's a whole run in Clerks 2, because I'm pronouncing it correctly, which is just an excuse for him to use racist terminology. That's all it is. He just uses every piece of terminology for a black person that he can think of. And it's all well and good saying, oh, but it's the character saying it. They're the character's supposed to be the idiot. Yeah, but the idiot who wrote it was the one who committed it to paper. He's the idiot. His dialogue is shit. And if anyone could compare it to Tarantino, they should be embarrassed because Tarantino's dialogue has an end purpose. It goes towards something. Whereas Kevin Smith's is just the nonsense garbage that appears in his fat head. Honestly... this film is a disgrace. All of his films are disgraceful. You, Mark.
All of them. Chasing you, Mark, Amy. Are a disgrace.
Chasing Amy. Good God almighty. Grow up.
No, that's not on. Right. Clerks, he made for the price... he sold all his comic books and made it. Tarantino watched that and said it was a masterpiece. It's a cult classic. It's up there with Big Lebowski. It is one of the best films ever made for the budget.
What?
It introduced, it won all the awards, Oscars, everything.
Did not.
It's an absolute masterpiece. I understand that Morat's was a bit tossed and it's a bit stupid, but it's still very good, very funny, good beer and pizza movie. Chasing Amy, I will put it out there, is one of the finest films ever made. It is absolutely outstanding.
Sweet God.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is dreadful. Happy to say that.
Yeah.
You know, Zack and Miri Make a Porno is pretty crap.
Yeah.
It's not great. And he, you know, if you...
Well, it's literally crap in the bit where doesn't someone shit in Seth Rogen's mouth or something?
Yeah, exactly that. Cop Out, he didn't write, so I'm not going to let him have, you know, too much... harshness for that. Jersey Girl is terrible, but there's a meaning behind that, and he made it for his dad that passed away, so you kind of a get out of jail card.
No, it's not.
Red State, you've not seen, and no. It's really good. It's his take on horror. And then obviously Tusk.
which is atrocious, as we all
know. And I will
know.
Happily say that it's the worst film I've ever seen.
Yeah. Now, literally, I think if you were to now go back over what you've just said and weigh up the ones that you admitted were bad compared to the ones you said you were good, you would see that you said more were bad than were good. So your opening statement that he's this amazing director and amazing writer, you've just demolished your own argument, dude. He's not. He's had a couple of good films. Chase and Amy I don't care for, but I get why people like it. Dogma I really like.
Oh, Dogma, yeah.
Yeah. But all the rest of his films are... are just appallingly bad, and the guy is a scam artist. The way, how he ever got to make his initial movies is beyond me. He got to make the first one because he put the money up himself. The fact that then people gave him money to make movies is a travesty, and that's why now he's back to the position where he's using his own multi-millions of undeserved money to make shit films again that he admits are for him and his friends rather than for the actual viewing public. Honestly, the man is a disgrace.
There were parts of this film that you did enjoy and you were laughing at.
There are lines that are funny, yeah. But that doesn't make him a genius.
I understand, because I went to see this film and my best mate was there saying this is dog shit. And I was like, no, fuck you. You know, this is a really good film. And I can understand that he's basically got 3 or 4 good jokes, like the Lord of the Rings, you know, the All About Walking. He's found, you know, he does the Your Shitty Acting Has Ruined My Saga Star Wars dig. And he just basically gets them and tries to piece them together. So if he can think, well, how am I going to do this? Well, what we'll do is we'll put them in a restaurant and we'll throw those jokes in. So I understand that there's no context, but I like it and it makes me laugh and it's funny. And there's moments in there that are really good.
But that's not enough. Being funny is not enough. One of the prerequisites for film, generally, is it's a weird little thing. It's called a plot. And this film doesn't have one. Still, what was it, about a week since we watched it? Still 7 days on, has the story kicked in yet? You know, there was nothing to it. There was a cramming in of a story in the last 10 minutes where Randall or whatever his name is. Is it Randall? I don't care.
Dante and
yeah,
Randall.
Dante. Dante knocks up some lass and then has to leave the lass he's with for this other lass, and that, you know, that's the story, but they put all that in the last 10 minutes, whereas the first sort of 90 minutes of the film are just pure old racist jokes. Brilliant, cheers. Thanks for that, Mark.
Adam?
Oh, I couldn't care less about Kevin Smith, but I'm loving the debate. Great minds battling it out, and I've got a front row seat.
What did you think to the intimate Kinky Kelly sex show at the end with the donkey?
Wasn't my favourite part of the film.
No? You were chuckling away at some of that.
Because, as I say, it's pure old humour.
Yeah.
I'm going to laugh at stupid, you know, scatological gags like anyone else, but it doesn't elevate the material. It doesn't make it a great film.
When you think of the movies and there's, like, iconic people out there, so, like, Rocky, you know, back in the 80s, Rocky was this big idol that everyone looked up to.
Yeah.
For me, in the 90s, and most recently, it's got to be Jay and Silent Bob. You know, they represent what... This iconic film. I'm trying to be serious.
You can't even say it without breaking.
I'm just trying to annoy you. What do you think of Jay and Silent Bob?
I hate them, honestly. I cannot see the worth of them at all. I hate Jason Mewes. I think he's a fool and a terrible actor. And, you know, I don't want to see him tucking his dick between his legs on screen ever again. Thanks. And then the whole Silent Bob character. Yeah, you're silent, but then you always end up speaking at the end of the film, don't you? So you're not really Silent Bob, are you?
But what
he says fuck
really...
all for an hour and a half and then says something, Bob. Get rid of him.
One of the things that made me laugh when we were actually sitting down watching this was, I think about 30 minutes into the film, Ben turned to me and just said, is this another one of those films where Silent Bob doesn't say anything for an hour and a half and then says something right at the end? And then when he says something right at the end, Ben just went, see?
Yeah. Nailed it.
I'm getting slightly pissed off at you, but I'm, you know, I respect that you have an opinion.
It's nice.
And I'm gathering... I think you don't like it.
Oh, yeah, you figured that, have you?
What? Are you going to come watch Clerks 3?
Definitely not.
Why? Why not?
I refer you to the last 10 minutes of the podcast. It's pointless. I don't know why there's going to be a Clerks 3, nor do I understand why there's going to be a Mallrats 2, other than what I've already said. It's him making films for his divvy mates. That's all it can be. It's him and his braying cretin of a co-podcaster who just loves his silly or pretends to love his silly ideas for money. You know, you've watched Tusk. At the end of Tusk, you hear the two of them on their podcast coming up with the idea for Tusk and laughing their tits off, saying, this is going to be great, yeah, let's make that as a film. And then they did, and look what happened.
It was terrible.
You know the sort of shit we come up with on this podcast. Imagine if we had the money to make that shit into reality. No one would want to watch it.
It'd be dreadful.
It would be dreadful. Some people shouldn't be given the power that they're afforded. He shouldn't be allowed to make movies anymore. There should be a law.
But the problem is, he said he was going to retire after Red State. That was his last thing. He's going to do a horror. I think it was his 10th film. I'm done. Then he came out and said, actually, I need some more money. I'm going to do Clerks 3. Tusk. Then he's going to do Clerks 3. Then he's going to do Morats 2. He's just going to carry on doing Dogma 2, Chasing Amy 2. You know, that's it now.
I don't know how anyone in the critical community has any respect for him. I know that Tarantino liked the first Clerks film. I know he did. I've read the things where he's praised it. Even he now must look at Smith and go, dude, where did it all go wrong? Surely. I can't understand how people can defend him as a filmmaker anymore when it's so obvious that the bad outweighs the supposedly good.
I like him.
Good debate.
But I will give you your credit, and he has gone downhill big time. Considering I talked about his best films were Clerks and Chasing Amy, they're his first two films. So you can see after that he's let himself go.
He rolled downhill quick.
Morats is stupid, but I like it. It's just an easy, stupid film.
Let's use my hands here. Let's do a finger count here. So let's start from the top. So my left hand is good, my right hand is bad. So
Clerks,
left hand,
brilliant, masterpiece.
So first one is Clerks, so you're saying that's in the good category. Yep. Next one.
Chasing Amy, masterpiece.
You're putting that in the good category. Morats. Next one. Morats is atrocious. Come on.
I'll give you that.
So that's going on the bad hand, the right hand.
Yep.
Next one.
Dogma, unbelievable.
Dogma, I'll give you. That's good.
Yep.
Okay.
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Atrocious. Come on, you know this.
Yep.
Bad hand.
Red State.
I've not seen it, but every review I've read has said that it's awful. You're the only
on
person
the bad one,
that's going on the bad hand. So we're 3 for 3 at the minute, 3 on each hand.
Zach and Miri Make a Porno is dog shit.
It's a dog shit film, yeah.
Clerks 2.
Clerks 2 is utter tripe, worthless.
Hold on, I'm just joining my hand onto the bad side.
Yeah, we're having to use Adam's
so
hand.
So is it 5-3 now?
So it's 5-3. What have we missed? Cop Out, 6-3.
Cop Out, he didn't have
Tusk,
any
Tusk, 7-3. Jersey Girl, 8-3.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? We've missed a couple, but you can't win now. No, it's so far to the bad side.
I might need my other hand here.
It's a point proven then. Kevin Smith is a fucking worthless hack.
Yeah!
It's done.
You know, I can't...
8-3.
If he's done genuinely a couple of good... And I genuinely do like Dogma, and you genuinely do love Chasing Amy, and that's and the first Clerks film, that's fine. But he is, at best, a director who has made a couple of good films and a lot of shit. He can't be defended as an overall good director or writer anymore. Because just the figures don't add up.
Hopefully, Clerks 3 and Morats 2 will hopefully get to 8-5.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, ratings. We do this. We actually give these ratings.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
So, I want you guys to go first so I can bump it up with a 10.
Right. It's a god-awful film with no story. The two main characters... Randall and Dante are terrible actors. The one who plays Randall is funny. I'll give him his credit on that. Anytime I did laugh was due to his delivery of lines.
Jeff Anderson, he's cool.
So him then. He's done a lot of work since.
He's actually working in a video shop, yeah. Probably.
So purely for the few times that I did laugh, and there were some genuine laughs, I will give it 3 out of 10.
Nice one, Pillow Pants.
I'm willing to give it 4 just for Rosario Dawson.
Fair enough.
That dance is unreal.
Oh yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm giving it a 10.
Ridiculous.
I'll give it a 5.
So let's do some maths.
5, 3, 4, 4.
It's a 4.
Yeah.
4 out of 10.
Whose turn is it now then for the next rewatch? Adam, isn't it?
Adam, yeah, save us, please, God save us.
It's my turn, and Ben, I know you're going to hate this.
Please say Morats.
Because, you know, after you getting even with me on The Phantom Menace and The Matrix Revolutions, I thought I need to get him back. So I know you're going to hate this. In the cinema soon, they're re-releasing Blade Runner.
Yeah?
So I'm choosing Blade Runner as the rewatch. Oh,
there is a God. And his name is Ridley Scott.
Did your heart start pounding for a second there?
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, you know, Blade Runner is coming out in cinemas, so we're going to watch Jersey Girl on DVD.
Boys, listener questions.
Yay!
Love this time.
Good. First one, Supernerds UK on Twitter, @supernerds_UK. They've had 2 questions this week, but because I like them, they can have both.
Okay.
First one, if you had to watch one double feature every day, what would it be?
How do you mean double feature?
Yeah.
Like a part 1, part 2 double feature.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with Mighty Ducks, so the third one doesn't count. Mighty Ducks 1 and Mighty Ducks 2. I'd like to watch that every day. That's or Clerks 1 or 2.
Oh dear. I could happily watch Ghostbusters 1 and 2 every day.
Actually, no, I'm going to change mine. Wayne's World 1 and 2. I love them.
That's good. That's a difficult one, that is.
Shame.
Back to the Future 1 and 2. I like 3, but I could live without it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fair enough. They've also asked, the best movie-related purchase you've ever bought. Have you ever bought any, like, merch or something cool that's...
Well, we are looking at my favourite movie-related purchase. It's this canvas that I've got that's, like, an artistic picture of Darth Vader that I love, and I think it only cost me about a fiver, but I think it looks great.
I'm going to annoy you with this.
Mm-hmm.
In Clerks 2, you know the little movie dolls that are on the tills?
Yeah.
I've got a couple of them.
Why did you need two?
In case I lose one, or they get stolen. You know, gold can get easily stolen. But I've also got, which is pretty rad, in Morat, you know, Banksy's wearing the blue hat.
No.
I've got that. So that's pretty good. Adam, have you bought anything?
I don't think I actually have, you know.
You've not got any of your memorabilia from when you were filming Batman Returns?
Oh, yeah. That wasn't a purchase. Keep your
nose.
It wasn't a purchase, was it?
Oh, yeah. Stole it.
I've got... Yeah, because even the posters in my room are like, they're Breaking Bad ones. So, I don't think I've ever bought any movie merch, really.
What about your Transformers pants?
Oh, yeah, the Transformers pants are cool.
But I bought them then. Don't count.
Yeah, and he likes it when I wear them.
They're nice.
In the bedroom.
Enough. Don't kiss and tell. Zoe Hammond. This is quite good because it goes relevant to the topic. So now you've talked about good books. What's been a really bad adaptation from the book to the film? She says, Perks of a Wallflower. Isn't it Perks of Being a Wallflower?
Yeah, it is.
She says that's dreadful.
Shame. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
I like that film.
Dreadful compared to the book.
Well, yeah,
the book
okay. is brilliant. Fair enough. Yeah, compared to the book, it's not on par. But I enjoyed the film for what it was.
I like Martin Freeman.
The Bible. The New Testament. I just, you know, the book is amazing.
Let the Right One In.
Yeah.
I love the book, Let the Right One In, and I love the original, I think it's Norwegian film.
Yeah.
But then they did an American remake called Let Me In, I think, that was shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
that was dreadful with a girl off Kick-Ass.
Yeah, Chloe Moretz, yeah.
It really didn't work. This is quite a good question. Steve Jordan, what do you predict will happen at Secret Cinema Empire Strikes Back? And what sort of scale do you think they'll go to?
That is interesting, isn't it? I don't know what parts of it they're going to recreate.
I have no idea.
Yeah, they're going to do... Like Dagobah.
You couldn't really do Dagobah with having loads of people mulling around it. Cloud City would be cool.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Hmm.
Hope Billy Dee Williams turns up.
He's got nothing else to do.
He's going to be in Clerks 3.
Even he wouldn't do that.
Twitter at J.O. Sturzer. Which comic character would you like to be as president?
The Punisher. He wouldn't take any shit.
Ben's just revealed his right-wing tendencies. probably Barry Allen. That'd be funny to see.
Just Bruce Wayne. That'd be good. Bit of money, bit of power. Seems to like his toys. Big Bad Wolf on Twitter, which is at Doopy. I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Idiot, get rid
Idiot,
of him.
Moron.
Wait.
Can we unfollow him on Twitter, please?
No. Give him a chance. I don't like Guardians of the Galaxy. He's actually said, am I dead inside? What is wrong with me?
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
And you've been sold a dodgy copy and it's not the right film because you can't not like it.
Is there like a Mac and Me style knockoff of Guardians of the Galaxy out there? Defenders of the Universe or something?
There's got to be. I don't know.
You are dead inside and no one can help you. There is no medicine that can be taken and no therapy that will work.
But yeah, that I don't understand. Watch we it can't over and over again.
We can't help you, mate. Sorry. Shame. At Slinky Yee, what film do you never get bored of watching?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day. I could watch it every day.
Dreadful. Is Mark going to say Clerks too?
No, Big. Whenever it's on telly, I'll never ever turn it off.
Great film.
So a lot of the recent Marvel ones, really. Like Cap 2... Guardian. I don't think I'd ever get bored of watching them, which is horrible for a DC fan to say.
At Swinton, who has been the girl, this is not like the last one, which is degrading, you've had the biggest crush on from a film? That's fine, because the last question was, who would you like to bang?
Degrading.
We won't answer that.
I think we might have had this, or I might have had this discussion with someone outside of the podcast, but my, I remember my first film crush being Cameron Diaz in The Mask.
In that red dress?
When she walks into Stanley Ipkiss's bank in that red dress.
We have
there was a stirring within me that I had never felt before.
We have discussed first movie crushes. Mm. Not my first movie crush, but Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow.
Yeah. But
go back earlier. I want to know your real, like when you were a kid and you weren't getting erections. And,
Shaun the
know.
Sheep.
Mine's going to be in Karate Kid, Ally.
Yeah.
She is yummy.
I quite liked Elizabeth Shue in Back to the Future as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What's she up to now?
Not a lot.
More ads too?
Not that.
That's it for questions this week. It's been quite short.
Oh, shame.
Shame. But keep your questions coming. Twitter's the best way to get hold of us, at STTE Podcast. Also, we do go on Facebook, which is facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. And Ben, what's the email address?
podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Beautiful.
No excuse for not getting in touch with us.
And if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I can't think of a question to ask them, I just want to look through some images to kind of inspire me, go on Instagram, Skip to the End Podcast. Pictures on there will inspire you.
Yeah.
That's it. Done.
So that brings us to the end of the episode. It was all right, wasn't it?
Not bad at all, yeah. Pretty good.
I don't think we've announced what film we're going to be reviewing next time around. Adam, do you want to let them know?
Yeah, go on then. We'll be doing Hot Tub Time Machine 2, the sequel to Hot Tub Time Machine.
Is it? I thought it was the sequel to something completely different.
Well, they were thinking about making it the sequel to Blade Runner.
And it would be nice to review a comedy, which we've not done since the show.
Dumb and Dumber 2?
Yeah.
Or Clerks 2 about 10 months ago.
So as I've said, we've not done a comedy. Yeah. So we'll be reviewing Hot Tub Time Machine 2. And so the next topic was one that I chose, which is top 3 cameos in films. That'll be a bit of fun. And we're also going to be doing our brand new feature. Do you want to give them a quick revision of what that is, Mark?
Yeah, it's Skip Back in Time, where we basically pick the year and keep going back. So we're going to do 2012, and between us, we're going to pick our favourite film from that year and basically justify why it's the best one.
And you've actually come up with a couple of extra features, haven't you, Mark? do you want to throw them out to the listeners?
Well, yeah, I'm going to bring them to the episode next week, so stay tuned. I've got a couple of new ideas that I'm going to bring along. You guys haven't heard them yet. And you're going to see if they basically get your seal of approval.
Let them know one. Let them know one of the ones that you've run past us so far.
I hope they're as good as your other ones.
The first one was going to be basically, we basically don't eat any food for about 3 or 4 days.
Right.
Then we go into a cinema and we pick what film we'd want to watch while starving.
Yeah.
So we're absolutely ravished. Like we haven't eaten and we're starving. And it's called, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Hungry, Hungry Skippos. Like it?
Yeah. Good God.
So,
almighty.
Next week...
Fucking hell.
Next week, I will bring another idea, and you can basically, if it gets past you or not... That's Hungry, Hungry Skippos,
the
and it has been copyrighted. So, yeah.
Dreadful.
Oh, and what we'll do next week as well, we're going to announce all our winners from the Comic-Con episode.
We are, yeah.
So we've got some cool prizes.
Yeah, so that's all the stuff we've got coming up on the next episode, which will be available in 2 weeks. Prior to that, though, we have got an extra special podcast coming out on Easter Monday, which is the full-length interview with Matt Davis, lead singer of Funeral for a Friend. So hear his thoughts on movies, games, comics, etc. So check that out and keep on listening.